Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Hello, it's your old pal Wilson. And we're bringing you the 12 Days of Richmas. Yeah, we went there. I'm sorry about that. These are the 12 most listened to episodes of 2023. Enjoy. This week, I'm joined by the mighty Darren Harriott. Hello, mate.
How's it going, Rich?
Yeah, good, man. We had you on before, and it was a great chat then. And yeah. So much has happened since the last time you've been on. Dancing on Ice superstar. What's going on, man?
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's one of those things you sort of just go, what's the worst that can happen? And I'm currently still in physio.
Oh, mate.
For numerous injuries, man. Yeah, I did my knee in. I've got whiplash, so I have to get that seen to once a week. I've got a new scar on my arm from when a blade sliced my arm open. I've got a bit of bone sticking out on my knee. But you know, it's still better than Christmas gigs.
This is yeah, all in the name of entertainment. Jesus Christ. I know.
Yeah, it's rough, man.
Mate, could you ice skate before?
No, I'd never even been to an ice rink before. I remember really? I walked in on the first day and was like, oh, this is cold. I had no idea what I was getting into. And it's really fun, like ice skating. It's such a strange niche sport because it's one of those things where 90% of people have done it like as a one-off, you know, every now and again you do it. But the amount of people who do that as a job is like bowling. We've all gone bowling. But the idea of being a full-time bowler is wild. So you meet these, you know, a lot of the professionals on the show. I learned quite quickly that ice skating is not really the sort of thing you go into out of your own free will.
Right, okay.
What I've learned is parents have dreams of their kids being ice skaters. And then they get their kid. Like my partner Tiffy, she said, oh, my mum's dream was she wanted her daughter to be a ballerina on the ice.
Right,
I was like, my mum wanted me to not steal from school. That was it. That was literally, yeah. But the show itself is great. Like, it's so fun. Everybody was so nice. I absolutely had a blast. And that's one of the fun things. And you know this, being a comedian, that we can kind of do anything we want now.
Yeah.
Like, we can, you know, you can be a stand-up, but also you can be a children's author. You know, you can be a musician, a singer, an actor, a poet. You can do absolutely. You can be like a painter or an artist. You can, you know, I look at like what Joe Lycett does. He does like books of like his paintings that he does when he's bored, and people buy them. I mean, I think he's got a book about bins or something coming out. He's literally got a book about bins, and it's one of those things that's so fun that makes entertainment just stand-up comedy is so much fun now. I think is that we're able to sort of do, and it's not really one of those things where, you know, because me and you have been doing stand-up long enough, obviously you've been doing it longer than me, where it was kind of that whole thing of if you did an advert, you that's it, you're not really a comedian anymore. It was that Bill Hicks line of and I was like, mate, I've done about seven. I've done a lot of adverts at this point.
I'm praying for adverts, that's what.
Mate, so, get yourself in. When I say adverts, it's mainly voiceovers. They're the only ones that I really get is voiceover adverts. Never get anything for free though. Got it.
Do you not?
No, I've done like Uber Eats. I've done like Mini. I've never had one thing for free. Not even like a side order from Nando's. You get nothing.
What?
No, I know. People are like, oh, but you get free stuff from Nando's. Never had one thing. You don't.
Mate,
no.
Isn't there this mystical black Nando's card that there's only a certain amount of them, and depending on your level, like sort of how well known you are.
Do you know how it works?
No.
The black card. So I first heard of the black card from Carl Hutchinson.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Geordie guy, yeah, because he did a corporate with Chris Ramsey.
Right.
They did a Nando's corporate, and he's like, I got it, because I went in there. And I just made them laugh and said, obviously, I love Nando's and all that, and they gave it me. But the key is, you can't ask for it. You can't do that. Once you ask for it, you do not get it. That's how it works.
Oh, my God.
So, and how it works is, you get a starter, main, dessert, for up to 6 people, absolutely free, every single day, but you don't get any, because Nando's sold alcohol, you don't get any alcohol. There's no alcohol included. So when I was with him, he would just go over in and go, hey, anybody want Nando's? We were like, yeah. I'm desperate to get one of those black cards. I really do.
Yeah, but that's it. Don't ask for it.
Don't ask for it. I mean, I don't want one. I'm not interested.
You'd like one if it got offered, but you know.
You know what?
You haven't asked. I brought it up, so.
That is true. You know what's brutal about it? So it, obviously it's based on like whether you're an influencer or whatever, and they check your social media every year to see whether you're like on the rise or not. And just imagine you have one and it gets taken away.
Oh fucking hell!
Brutal.
That's awful, isn't it? That you just get that letter in the post or however they do it, that email.
And then you're back at the, I don't know, the Glee Birmingham, and someone, and you're, oh, Rich, you got your Nando's, let's get a Nando's. Yeah, about that. It's all changed.
And it'll go round like wildfire. Wilson's lost his Nando's card.
The next time I see Carl, I haven't seen Carl in a few years, I will say that to him, and I'm hoping he's still got it.
Because I heard there was only so many of them. There wasn't a... infinite amount. There's a finite amount.
You might get a Nando's corporate one day. You never know. I'm eager for it. I'll take the bad gig. I'll take it if it's a horrible gig just to be in there and get one. I don't care. That'll be my pay. Give it a club card.
Well, now you've smashed your body to bits on the ice. Surely you're eligible. Everyone knows who you are now. It's really elevated you. I mean, you were already up there, but now this has just shot you through the fucking roof, man.
Yeah,
it must be weird for you.
It's been really fun. The thing with Dancing on Ice is that I learned quite soon is that the audience, it's very different. It's different to, you know, sort of a Love Island audience. It's not even really like a stand-up comedy audience. It's more like a family audience who are at home on a Sunday afternoon watching ice skating. So it's always quite interesting because I know that that's an audience that I would never reach normally because, you know, we do stand-up in clubs and, you know, that audience, generally, with stand-up in clubs, I mean, I find that most audiences are, like, all under 35 now. Like, everybody in stand-up seems to be very... again, you know, I'm talking about, like, the busy cities. I'm sure if you go a little bit out, you'll see it a bit older, but everybody seems quite young and quite, you know, quite young, quite cool, you know, metropolitan, living in London, that sort of thing. So I don't really get to that audience that Dancing on Ice has, which is sort of like the, you know, more middle-aged sort of elder couples and families who would watch an ice skating show. So it's nice to, you know, speak to them a little bit. And I've no idea what it's going to do for my career, but ultimately I had a good time. And, I did that, you know. When you're a comedian on any of these shows, you've always just got to be funny.
Yeah.
Like, even if you're mad, you're pissed off, you feel like you've been mistreated or anything like that, you've just got to be funny.
Yeah.
Because it's your job, you know. That's it's like, you know, you've done it when you do a TV show or some sort of panel and you're the only comedian and you're like, well, okay, I guess I gotta be bringing the laughs in because nobody else is gonna, and you have that like pressure. And with Dancing on Ice, I knew that, as well as, you know, the skating side, of course, you've got to be good. But as soon as Holly and Phil asked me a question, anytime, you know, I knew I had to be funny. So they would come up to me, and it was really nice because the producers would come up to me and they'd go, oh, we've got questions for you. And every week they'd ask me questions because they said that I was being funny. I was the only one who was trying to be funny. So they would ask me a question, and sometimes I was silly, over the top, funny, and they said they really liked that. And I went, well, yeah, because I know that for a show like that, being the best ice skater is not going to get me where I need to be, really.
No.
Like, winning the show is fine and would be great, but I know that in 5 years' time, no one's going to be booking me because I'm an ice skater.
No, yeah, true.
In 6 months' time, no one, they're going to be booking me because they saw me and they thought I was funny and likable, and, you know, I showed that I could be funny on live TV.
Yeah.
That, so to me, as much as the ice skating was important, that part to me was like, if ice skating was, you know, like middle priority, being funny to me was even more than being good at ice skating, because I just knew that's where my value is. That's where my stock is. None of us are professional ice skaters. No one expects us to be amazing. But they do expect me to be funny because that's my job. So I had to make sure that I did that all the time. And that's like an extra little bit of pressure that nobody else had to go through on the show. But then again, I put myself through it because I knew that was what I did. And you wouldn't notice it to when you watched the show, but I would, you know, I'd get like 2 minutes before, they'd say, oh, Darren, we've changed this question. You know, Holly and Phil are going to ask you, blah, 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 blah. And I'd be like, okay.
Oh, wow.
And then I'd just be sitting there going, okay, where should I go with this? Blah, 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 in my head, just working out what the question is. Because I know that I've got to do it. And they've never had on the show a proper stand-up comic. Like, you know, a modern stand-up comic. They've never had somebody like us on the show. I mean, they've had a comedian on, but it was like Joe Pasquale. What Joe Pasquale does is he's constantly sort of pulling pranks and being silly, and, you know, there's also, you know, it's old school type of comedy, as opposed to somebody who's a bit more new school. But also on the ice, I was very serious with like the training, and they were quite surprised. I think one of the trainers was quite surprised how serious I was when it came. I was like, well, yeah, I wouldn't do this if I didn't. I didn't think I could do it. And that's another thing. Have you noticed that, Rich? Because how long have you been doing comedy for now?
19 years.
Have you noticed how comedians now are like athletes? There's like athlete comics around, man. There's like CrossFit superstars. There's like proper fit athletes. I can't remember who it was, but I was talking to a comic and it was like, I miss the days where like comedians would be like doing coke in the green rooms and like they'd be like hammered on stage and all. I was like, I don't see if I saw a comedian drunk on stage, like actually I would look at it like a horror show, like, oh my god, what is happening? I you just don't see that anymore.
even when I started behind the bar, when I started out, and you'd see that like comedians were just fucking on it, they were just pissed off their heads. There's a famous story of Glenn Wall being on his off his head on pills, and he was halfway through his set, they had to turn him around because he was doing it to the curtain. I mean, I don't know if it's true. I've heard that story a few times, but you don't get that now. In fact, if you feel weird if you're drinking a beer or a drink, or alcoholic drink in a green room.
Yeah,
I'll do it. I don't do it. It's certain gigs I do that at. I'll be like, fuck it, this is like being in my lounge, I'm going to have a drink.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time, you don't even think about it. You're like, I'm not going to have a drink. I just need to do the gig. And I don't look like one of those old, sad comics sitting in the corner. Why did it never happen for me? And you're just getting pissed.
Yeah.
You know, we've all seen those fellas, and I don't want to be that. So I think you have to be on it now.
There is something to be said for the sort of comic on stage, mic in the stand, sort of wobbling beer in his one hand,
yeah,
ranting, and the beer's spilling. There is something to be said for that kind of like a sort of old school, sort of loud, ranty comic with a beer. But I guess that's like Edinburgh, though, isn't it now? Edinburgh, you see a lot of comedians just go off the rails for the month.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is because, you know, some comedians are married, kids, you know, they have a very sort of a life that is sort of, you know, I take the kids to school, pick the kids up, go to this gig, blah, 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 blah. And then Edinburgh is like, oh, it's half term anyway. I don't have to do any of that. Also, my kids are in Manchester. I'm in Edinburgh. I'm 35 and I'm in a uni dorm for a month. it gets wild. There's always stories of comics coming back from Edinburgh who are like, oh, I don't drink anymore. I don't drink.
I'm done. And you just go, wow, something happened to you, man. But you have to, I feel, because it's not just a case of now just doing comedy. You have to do so many other things. Like you have to do podcasts and social media things. And you always have to be putting stuff out. That doing that and being pissed and things, you just can't do it. This has now become, this is like a 24-hour job almost. Like you're always thinking about the next thing you have to do. And like you said, you did Dance on Ice and you've had a great time doing it. But really it's just an advert for you. And to get people to come to see you at your shows, really, and you need to be on it. So you can't be drunk in green rooms and drinking like we used. Those old boys wouldn't be able to cut it now.
Yeah,
you know, they just would fall by the wayside. It's almost like you have to keep fighting your corner now more than ever to keep relevant and involved.
That's a very good point. Comedians nowadays, yeah, we have to do like everything. I mean, you know, back in the day, it was you could literally just go on stage, do jokes, make a good living, go home when you're done. Yeah. Whereas now, we're all putting out content online. Yeah. You know, most comedians now are, you know, video editors or, you know, they all know how to edit videos, do their own subtitles, you know, make funny videos. You know, I've now trying to make funny videos at home because I see it and I go, oh, yeah. This is like they're selling a lot more tickets now because they put out funny videos and people just flock to it. It's, you know, my agent probably wouldn't like me saying this, but I go, it's way better than TV.
Yeah.
Pulls in way more numbers than TV. If I would give up, I would happily give up 6 months worth of solid TV work for a clip. No, I'd give up a year's worth of solid TV work for one clip that gets 10 million views on any social media platform, because I know that those views are going to equal people following me, and I could tour. I could have a really big tour off one clip, and everything has... It's crazy. I mean, there's a few comics now who... You know, you look and you go, whoa, you're so, I was following you. Whoa, your social media, you've got a million followers now. What happened? Yeah. And you look and you go, oh, that video got 5 million views. Oh, that got 10 million views. Yeah. And all of a sudden, they're in a completely different space with different people offering them so many different things. And all they have to do is just go on tour. I mean, you can look at Nigel Ong. Like Nigel just left everybody completely, and he's like, "I'll just do YouTube stuff and sell out the Apollo."
The back of that.
Whatever, Nigel. What happened to us at the Pleasance 4 years ago, mate? Well, who do you think you are? Come back. That's funny.
He's gone.
Yeah, you're gone.
Isn't it funny though? That we're talking about this now, but when we started out, when you think where you came from, now we spoke about this before on your episode, we talked about where you grew up and how you grew up and the environment you were in, and now you're on TV ice skating. How fucking mad is that?
It's wild. When I did a few interviews with newspapers and stuff, and they would ask me about my life, you know, being in a gang, carrying a knife, all of that sort of stuff, my dad's death. And then, in my head, I'd be, you know, talking about, yeah, you know, when I was young, I definitely would have stabbed somebody because that was the mentality we had and all this. And then it'd be like, so, you're doing Dancing on Ice with Joey Essex and Ekin Sue and Vivian, a drag queen. And I'm like, yeah, I know, it's weird, isn't it? Everything has really changed. The blades in my hand are now on my feet. Like, what is going on? It's such a strange life because I do think about the way things were when I was younger and how different things could have been. Like I said, I definitely would have, you know, stabbed somebody or been killed or stabbed or whatever myself. And then to, you know, 20 years later, I'm doing an ITV entertainment show in a pair of gold tight shorts skating around an ice rink. You know, it's... And the thing about the show that was great for me was all my family came. So yeah. When you do the show, you get 6 tickets. When you're on the show, you get 6 guest tickets. They sit in the family area. They'll be on TV. They'll all be interviewed and all that sort of stuff. And so all of my family came to every single one. I had... Amazing. Literally, they all took it in turn. So my aunties this time, my uncles, cousins, my mom came down. It was great. And they've all been on ITV cheering. They had banners and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, my family, you know, it's pretty similar to your family. They're not a TV family, but, you know, but they support me. They're not going to, you know, they're not a TV. It's not like they're trying to get guest tickets to places. They've never been to a show before. So they're all coming down. And being on the TV and cheering was amazing. Like, that was probably my favourite bit about doing the show, was they all got to come down and see me. It was great.
Yeah. I bet it was amazing.
Yeah, it really
But isn't it funny, if you think back to younger you, when you're wandering around with a knife in your pocket, saw that older you was going to be doing this now.
It's ridiculous. It's so crazy, and it really hits me quite a bit, because I think about you know what I was like and my mentality and all that, and then I think if I had stabbed someone and went to prison, and that's it, my whole life is just completely different. Like one stupid mistake, my whole life is completely different. And whenever I read the newspapers, and there's always some teenage kid being killed, you know, or some gang affiliated or whatever, and the kid's like, you know, 14, 15, I always feel really sad, obviously, for the kid that's been murdered.
Yeah.
But I also feel bad for the kid that's done it, because I guarantee if you just speak to the kid, probably just a very much a kid still, who just had a moment of madness. Like, I was watching it was like a London thing about gangs, like a film,
right?
And they showed this one kid who stabbed another kid and killed him, and then as he run off, he was like, yeah, got ya, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you wouldn't be like that. No. This kid was like, yeah, we got him, blood. Yeah, da, da, da. And the kid was like, bro. And I was like, that wouldn't happen. Like, you wouldn't be jumping for joy that you've just murdered this kid when you're 15. You wouldn't do that. You'd immediately have regret. You would immediately be like, oh no, what have I done? My life has changed. You wouldn't be sort of dancing over his. It's stupid. Whenever I see, I always just think, man, this kid who's now going to spend, you know, his life is completely ruined.
Yeah.
You know, as it should be for killing someone. But I'm like, God, it could have just been so different with just a blink of an eye. It's a blink of an eye difference from doing something like that and not doing something like that. And, you know, because I always look at it and go, that could have been me so easily. So there's a part of me that always sees these other kids and goes, you could be me now. You could be doing this. It's it always really gets me that.
Yeah, there is that. I think they need to realise that trying to impress their mates, like the other members in the gang, ain't the be all and end all, because that's not going to be around forever, is it? So for whatever reason, they're going to, some of them will get banged up, some of them are going to get killed, some of them are going to, whatever, they're going to go off. And I mean, you're going to be left with what you did forever.
I mean, how many of your mates from high school do you still even talk to? You still even know. When that's them in the gang. They're like, nah, these are my boys for life. What, you're still going to be hanging about with these same guys doing the same thing in 30 years? You're not going to happen. No. But at that time, you think it's all about them. You think they're all about you. And nah, these are my boys. We're boys for. And it's never, ever, ever like that. It's just, it's such a waste. It's, you know, it's such a shame. That you know, because it happens so much now, and I can only imagine how worse it is with social media, and
yeah,
you know,
because
I didn't have it. That's the thing. I'm old enough where when we had MSN Messenger at school, and MSN Messenger talking to my mates was the reason why they all beat me up in the gang, because we had an argument on MSN Messenger. There was no Facebook, there was no MySpace, there was none of that. So imagine, because MySpace came out a year later. So I left school in 2005. MySpace, I had MySpace, I think near the end of that year, but I'd already left school. So I can only imagine what things would have been like with MySpace. You and your mate arguing about who's in your top eight and what song and all that nonsense going on.
It would have been
really bad. And now, of course, you've got all these apps. You've got, you know, you've literally got 12-year-old kids who are able to edit videos, edit YouTubes, make great thumbnails and all this. They, you know, if you've got a beef with somebody, you can easily make a song and a video. That's what drill is. That's how drill has got so big, because so obviously when you look at normal music videos, you know, it's all produced by somebody who does music videos for a living, you know, somebody who probably does a film, a TV show, etc., etc. Drill music, because obviously it's all about the hiding their identities and the balaclavas and a bunch of guys, 9 times out of 10 when you watch a drill video, it's terrifying. You're like, I wouldn't want to be near any of these. There's like 30 guys, hoods up, gun fingers. I don't want to do that. And it's because it's their own friends, normally the ones who are in their crew, who are probably under the age of 20, who can edit videos like an absolute boss, and then they can put these videos out every day, and it helps them with their anonymity as well, because they don't have to, you know, they don't have to contact a video editor, because they've got like 5 in their crew anyway, because when you go to school now, a lot of schools don't really do textbooks anymore. It's all sort of like online. It's all iPads and computers. So there are, you know, whereas, you know, when I went to school, we had IT, where we had to go into a room to have computers. So that's why they're so good at getting videos edited. Now, I mean, you know this, because you do a show. With my podcast, Shame is Delicious, we have to get a thumbnail guy. We had to find a separate thumbnail guy who, that's what his job is. He makes thumbnails for YouTube. He knows exactly what YouTube to get the algorithm.
Okay.
And that's his job. I pay him once a week to make one thumbnail. That's his whole job. It's crazy that this is like a career that you can have. Yeah. And he does really well off it. He's very good.
Yeah. I think I'm lucky. I've got producer Paul. He does all that. He takes care of everything. I don't have to worry about it.
You are lucky.
And what I love is that producer Paul loves new tech, and he loves new things. And so when he finds a new way of putting these videos together, he gets all excited, and I'm like, I'm so glad I've got you, because if it was just me, I'd have one thing and it wouldn't change ever.
I'd have a complete stencil. Just a nice stencil.
It's fucking great. He does it all. He goes, right, I've just found this new thing, and I'm like, all right, I trust you, and let's do it. And we do it, and it's always brilliant. It's always brilliant. So these people, like you say, they don't even need managers now. They don't need agents, and they don't need record labels, and they don't need.
Yeah,
they do it themselves.
It's a good thing. It really is, especially, you know, because obviously we're comedians, so we can talk about comedians. You know, there's a lot of comedians who you look at and you go, I can't see a comedy, like a modern, you know, like an entertainment comedy agent, shall we say, representing you.
No.
Because I don't think you are, you've, I don't, first of all, it sounds horrible, but I don't think you as a person fits TV. Like your material, the way you speak, the way you are, the way you look, it's probably not going to work for TV. But what you can do now is you don't need it.
No.
If you've got the drive, you don't need an agent anymore. No. I've got terrible drive. I need an agent. I need somebody to help me with my diary and sort all this out. But there's a lot of guys and girls who learned how to edit videos, put videos out every few days, and they're really and what's happened now is there's almost a divide, because so I do quite a bit of TV, and I'm not popping on socials, but there's people who are popping on socials who do zero TV, and a lot of the and what's quite funny is the people who are popping on socials who are doing really well on socials, they're selling way more tickets than me currently on a tour, because it's shifted heavily into the people online. So now there's guys like me who do quite a bit of TV who's trying to get back, trying to catch up with the internet socials guys, because when you think of like selling tickets on a tour as a comedian, and I keep bringing up selling tickets on a tour as a comedian because essentially that's kind of everything that we do.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do Dancing on Ice because I wanted to ice skate. I did it because I wanted to, it's something different, but it helped me sell tickets on a tour. People know me. That's the whole point of you do all these things is, you want a bit more visibility and stuff. And But the guys who are, working their butts off putting out these clips, they're usually doing really well on tour. And what I tell other comedians who, because there's a lot of comedians who are like, oh man, all the content, man, I don't want to do any of it, and I'm sick of seeing it, is I go, the world is a big place. It's very big. Like, my Instagram used to be full of just people in a podcast studio, people posting clips of crowd work, people posting, and you go, it looks big to me and a lot because I'm in that world. But your friend doesn't have that at all. Your friend does not have constant podcast. They don't at all. Also, if you're a comedian, you can just mute.
There's
no shame in me. I've muted so many comics who are my friends and I like them a lot. But I've muted them because I'm like, I don't need to keep seeing these every day. I don't need to keep seeing it every single day. And it's healthy, man. I actually think it's good for your mental health to just mute. Because obviously, I don't want them to think I don't like them, because I do really like them and I really respect them and I think they're very talented. But some of the posts, they just don't do me any good. Like, some of your posts don't make me feel good. And you're not doing it on purpose, obviously. So I'll mute you. Oh, it's great. Whole new world.
Yeah, I've done a bit of that. And I'm sure it's happened to me as well, because you can tell by the engagement when you post stuff. There's not many comics engaging in this.
Rich,
I've been muted, man. I know I have.
Rich, I know a few comics, and I've looked at my stories, and I've gone, so-and-so's never watched one of my stories. I've been muted. I can tell. I know what comics have muted me. And I'm like, and I cannot complain because I have done it. 9 times out of 10, I've probably muted them as well. It's fine.
Like you say, it's not personal. And people listening to this that aren't in this industry that we're in, it's the same for them as well. Like, if you're listening to this and there's people in your life that you just go, oh, I love you, but I can't see your bullshit that you pump out online. I just can't watch it. That's a different person, the stuff that's coming out online. That's just their online presence. Just mute them.
Rich, how many people do you think were muted when the vaccine came out and they were heavy anti-vax and posts were about... Because I've always been... When it comes to the vaccine, I don't care if you're anti-vax, I don't care if you're pro-vax, just don't make it your whole personality. That's my whole thing. So if you're posting too much about the vaccine or anti-vaccine, I'm going to mute you because I don't want to hear either one.
I
don't want to see it. I don't need to see you posting about it. And I'm sure there's a lot of that. There was a lot of that when George Floyd died. There was a lot of mad posts and all that. People getting muted left, right and centre. Then, some of them are just unfollowed. But you've got to do it, I think, for your own mental health. And I think some people feel quite guilty about doing it because they almost feel like they're sort of disrespecting their friend or their mom or their whoever. And you can't, man. Just protect your own sanity.
Exactly. For your own good.
Yeah.
Because this, I do know there's been a couple of people and they've gone, oh, did you see so-and-so said blah, blah, blah. No, I haven't seen any of them. Oh, yeah, I muted them. And then I have to go and have a look. And then I'll go, oh, shit, yeah, that's a bit fucking nuts what they're posting there. That's why I muted them, because I don't want to see that batshit
exactly.
stuff.
It does, it does feel very strange when you know you've muted somebody, but you go and check their page out. It is a strange feeling. Like, I didn't want to see your post, but I should check in just to see if... And maybe in my head, I'm just having a weighing up a decision as to whether I'm going to unmute them for a bit.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I will unmute some people just because I want to see something different in my stories at the top, like a different face. Because you just get the same faces, and you go, "Yeah, let's spice things up a little bit on a Monday. Why not? Let me
let's change it up, man." Yeah,
yeah.
I'm the same. Yeah, it's just sometimes I'm like, no, I don't want to see this anymore. And I just got, and I'm sure, you know, the trouble is I don't post much. I post a bit, but I'm always being told I don't post enough. And I'm like, yeah, but I post all the time. Like, no, you've got to post 3 times a day and you've got to be on it and you've got to be this. And I'm like, oh, I've got time. I haven't got time.
You know what it is, Rich? You've kind of got to, so doing the podcast, and you know, this is your podcast. When you put the clips out every now and again, whoa, you strike lucky. Yeah. You'll throw a clip in and you'll check it 2 hours later. You've got 5,000 views.
Yeah.
What? I posted this too. What? I normally get 5,000. That's like me. I get 5,000 in a week. 5,000 in 2 hours. Oh my gosh, what's happening? And then there's this algorithm and you try, and then you'll post another clip and you'll get like 200. And you're like, oh no. Yeah. It's so hard. It is like, you are chasing that high. And there's some comics who are, like, the most prolific in terms of videos. I mean, Rialina and Dane in particular. Yeah. I love both of them. Jesus, Rialina's posting like... Dane posts like 3 stand-up clips a day. I don't know how he does it. I don't know where he gets the clips from. I don't know what he's doing. Because you know when the comic is posting a lot of clips when you go, wait, that's a clip of you with hair. Who are you trying to fool? That's an old posting. But Dane's is all like recent, and he's one of those guys that he sees it and he just keeps posting it and posting and posting. And what will happen is eventually you'll strike gold. You'll get that clip, and it's very odd because, you know, comedy is all about like in the moment. It's supposed to be in the moment, that live feeling. Whereas now, I've done stand up on stage a few times recently where I've said something in a certain way because I know that I'm editing it on a clip.
Right.
And I know that that's going to be put up as a bit of stand up at some point. So let me make sure that I say it this way because I want the subtitles to have, like, it's little things like that. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what? I'm giving myself that extra little bit of pressure on doing stand-up because that is where it's going. It is all online. It's like, I'll tell you what's happening. All the comedians now are just putting out sort of stand-up specials on YouTube.
Yes.
Like the days of, remember that, you know, I remember the days of like, oh, HBO special. Oh, somebody's got a Comedy Central special. Oh, who's this? What? Oh, remember when Netflix had Netflix special was like, what is going on? Nowadays, like, it's not the same. Most comics won't even bother even thinking of Netflix or a Prime or anything like that. They will immediately just go, I'm filming it. What are you going to do? I'm putting it on YouTube. I'm going to film it. I'm going to cut it into about 15 clips, all edited, subtitles, minute long, put them out over the next few months, then I'll release the full special. Bam.
Yeah.
That's exactly how people do it now. And again, it's that whole thing of putting it, you know, taking it back and putting it all in your own hands. And to record a special now and get it edited and that, it's not that much money.
No.
Because all you need is 3 cameras. And let's be honest, every single comedian has about 2 or 3 cameras now at home because everybody's recording themselves.
And they
know production companies that would happily come and record it. I mean, I did a gig the other day and 2 of the acts who were on had brought their own film crews to record. They brought their own film crews to come in. There was one had 2 guys with gigantic cameras who were filming, because they're filming a special. But these are all acts who were really good on socials. And I was like, yeah. And it was at Top Secret as well. And Top Secret, as we know, have recordings that they send out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this act was like, well, no, I actually want it to look a certain way. So he had his own guys with like mounted cameras to record.
Fucking hell.
No, this is what it is, Rin. This is what it is. This is stand-up now. It's all... It's not to be digested in the room.
No.
As well. It's purely to be digested laying on your back, swiping to the right as you go through different... Like, that is what stand-up is now.
Mate, going back to what you said about being on stage and editing as you go, because you know you're recording it for a bit, for a clip. I did it. I put the clip up, but I remember before... when the thing happened in the room, and then I actually said to the audience, I went, that's the one, that's it, that's going out on TikTok, that's the one. And everyone was laughing, and I'm like, oh, I sound like such a prick.
Rick Heckler gets destroyed. Comedian. I think I saw this one. Was it something like comedian gets destroyed or something like that?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
I saw that.
So that's it.
That.
And you got to word it so people go, what's this? Just to get them to click on it. So now I'm gonna put things up like comedian gets beheaded live on stage or whatever.
Yeah. There's so many. You've got to do it. I mean, we all hated clickbaity titles. That were, oh, it's just a bit of clickbait. But I'm telling you, on YouTube and those algorithms and the socials, it really works. I'll tell you what also really works. I remember when there was a few comedians now that have sort of really blown up on socials. They were unashamedly post a video and they would put it in a WhatsApp group. Can everybody retweet it for me?
Yeah,
and they would say, can you all retweet? And it really does work. And there is something in it to be said with comedians, man. Like, if we all just started our own WhatsApp group, like a big one where there's like 20 of us, and we literally all just go, hey guys, why don't we all just post each other's videos? Like, if I'll post this video, because how many videos have you retweeted where you haven't even watched the video? Yeah. I do it all the time. I'll retweet a friend of mine's video because it's a friend of mine. Yeah, sure. Go. Let me help you get some more views. And I think just a nice WhatsApp group, and it's purely, and I'd make it, I'd be strict with it as well. I would be like, no. This is, you just post a video in, that's it. Because what will happen is it'll just turn into like a bitch comedy fest all the time. You know what comedians... No, we're not doing that here. This is purely just to help each other grow on socials. Let's stay away from that. That's a great idea. Yeah.
All the gossip. I'm not in any of the groups. But I'm mates with a couple of people that are, and I get my gossip from them.
Yeah.
And they tell me what they say. I get screenshots going, this is what's going around today. I'm like, fuck it out. Just such a bitchy bunch of bastards. Honestly.
There's always something, isn't there? There's always something. I mean, you know, comedians arguing with other comedians is something that, you know, I'm not used to. I mean, I did my first gig 2006, and the idea of comedians like trying to get other comedians to not be booked for gigs because of they don't like their jokes is insane. It's insanity to me because people wonder why audience members can be so brutal online, you know, like doxing comedians. You know, you do a joke, they don't like, this comedian's a racist, and then they'll you know, the thing about that makes us so easily accessible is all we're doing is promoting where we're gonna be. So if you hate us, you just get our tour poster. You can then contact the venues on Twitter, which people do. I've seen do for other comics and say, why would you book this guy? He clearly hates black people or hates Asians. And people wonder why that happens. And it's because a lot of comedians attack other comics for doing jokes that they don't like or don't agree with. And I just think it's very strange to me because everybody's level of honesty is different. You know, you got into this industry for different reasons because I got into this industry, and not everybody got into comedy because, you know, they have a happy, sunny disposition. They had a great upbringing. They have a great life. You know, I got into comedy because I had pain in my life. So my comedy is always going to have some of that pain in it. But to other people, that pain might be like, whoa, this is too much. But yeah, I know, but it's like my pain. Like, why am I not allowed to sort of talk about comedy and do it in this way? It's the strangest thing about comedy now. Yeah. Probably even more stranger to me than the whole online sort of YouTube clip comedy, because I always used to think that comedians were like properly together.
That was it, right?
It's us versus the agents, the reviewers, the audience members, the bad bookers. You know, that's us. And
yeah, man. And I remember there was one particular older comic years ago. I think I just started doing comedy, so I was the other side of the bar now. But I remember talking to him. No, I was behind the bar. And I remember saying to him, like you get here just before you're on, and then you fuck off. Like, what's all that about? And he's like, these aren't my mates. They're colleagues. I've got friends in the industry, but, you know, I know them and we work together and there's no animosity, but I'm not here to see them. I'm here to do a job. I'm just doing my gigs and then I'm fucking off. And I was like, ah, shit, I didn't realise. I thought everyone was a pal, everyone was a mate.
Yeah.
Everyone. Now you find you've got your pockets now. You've got certain, like, I like to get on with everybody, but there's certain people that I would call up or I would text. And there's other people that I don't know in that way, so I don't. But
yeah, yeah.
But I'll message people online, like with you, if I see you in a decent pair of shoes, which is often.
Thank you,
I
sir.
I fucking love that.
A couple of style icons we are.
Mate, you know what? I say it all the time on here. Footwear is so important, and you shall be judged if yours is lacking.
You know what I always think of footwear? I think of that John Bishop was talking about how, I think he was doing... he was doing a gig in Liverpool when he was doing weekends, and he would say, oh, the worst thing you could do was like die on your ass on the first night of a weekend, because then you'd have to come back and you'd have to face the bouncers and them, and nobody would want to look you in the eye. And he'd go, that's why I always wore a mad pair of shoes. He says, because that way they'd always look down and be like, fucking hell, you're wearing cowboy boots. That's great.
It's important.
It is for various
reasons, but that's what I mean. So I'll message you and go cracking wheels, man. But that's it. So you do. There are pals. You do. Yeah, there are pockets of you that you make friends, and you're in WhatsApp groups and things like that. But then that's the same with everything. But yeah, it isn't as everyone in it together. Some people get on. They jump on these pylons because it's. They see it as, I'll get another person out of the way because they're the reason I'm not further up the ladder. Mm. So if I get a more successful comedian out of the way, then that'll help me. Or they attach their name to a controversy, so they'll be tweeting about it, or they'll be doing something, so their name's involved in it somewhere.
What?
And you're like, just fucking don't.
What always gets me is, it's like, do these people not see that it could be you tomorrow? I think what happens is people always think it has to be the extremes. It has to be a comedian on stage saying, you know, every offensive racist word with a joke that doesn't really land as well. It has to be that. Well, no, sometimes it could just be, Nish Kumar had dinner rolls thrown at him at a charity gig because he talked about how bad the government was.
Yeah,
and it's like, and then they got ragged through online by all the, you know, all the sort of Tories who are anti-Nish. And I know Nish, you know, sort of pushes at the Tories online and whatnot as well.
Yeah,
but it's just like, you see how easy it could be if you just do material that somebody doesn't agree with. It doesn't always have to be, oh, this person was saying, you know, all this horrible stuff about, you know, trans women or something. It doesn't have to be that. It could be such a little thing. It will happen at some point. To a comedian who just says they don't like dogs. They'll be like, oh, that's what's going to happen. They'll just do material about how they don't like dogs. And I tell you now, they will lose gigs. People will be like, how do you not like dogs?
Yeah,
what?
Yeah.
What is going on? Because that's kind of where we're at, this outrage. But then, you know, on the other side, if I'm just playing devil's advocate, it makes comedy feel exciting. We're dangerous.
Mate, I know what you mean. And then again, you kind of go, well, there's no such thing as, you know, all publicity is good publicity and all that sort of thing. And I don't know. But it is getting a bit... Even the other night, I did a gig in Reading, and I'd done a bit about kinky sex. It's not even graphic. It's just saying that the thing is with kinky sex, once you've both finished, All you're left with is admin. Like, you've got to pick up after you've got to tidy up. And that's all it is. And I do this bit about my wife coming down from the ceiling like Tom Cruise down a lift shaft. And my wife has seen that joke many times, and she laughs at it, and we laugh at it. And so I did that the other night, and then I was doing some more stuff. So I was about sort of 7-8 minutes away from that material that I'd just done. And then this woman put her hand up, and I'm like, what's up? And she just went, why do you think it's okay for someone like you to talk about kinky sex? I went, what do you mean? Like, she said, well, you know, why do you think it's okay to talk about those things? And I went, well, because it's my life. I mean, you know, we all get up to things. We all do stuff. We should be able to talk about it and laugh about it, you know? And I said, why? What's the matter? Do you have an issue with this? And she went, I just don't think it's appropriate to be talking about it. And I went, but what if we go down that road and we try to cater for everybody, we won't talk about anything. And I was, and it's not even, it wasn't even a controversial bit. It's just about the fact that if you indulge in kinky sex and toys and wear tying up or whatever, when you've finished, you've got to tidy up and you've got to put it all away and you've got to untie each other or whatever else. It's a stupid bit.
Yeah.
She got so upset.
Yeah.
And I just thought, what the fuck, man?
You know what can happen with stand-up? That it's always something that we all forget sometimes with hecklers, and it just made me think of it. You don't know how you look to audience members.
No. True.
And how you come across. So, like, as in, like, obviously you're being funny, but to her, she might, like, he reminds me of my dad. He reminds me of the guy, of a teacher. He reminds me of this. And so the way she's like, you shouldn't be talking about it, it triggered something in her. It got her thinking about someone. And she's like, well, you, because the way she said it, it sounds like there are people who look a certain way that she would be okay with that, whether that's a woman or whatever. But you saying that to her is like, no. A man of your age should not be talking about those kinds of things. It's so strange that you know, and this goes for all hecklers. You would see a room of people having a good time laughing.
Yeah.
And then you've moved on from the material. And there's a part of you that's like, no. I need to hear him on this. I need to hear what he thinks of how he thought that was an acceptable joke to make on stage at a comedy gig. That's why I you know, this will definitely bite me back in the ass at some point. I am such a big defender of comedians at all times.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what the joke is. You're a comedian, you're on stage, you're doing a joke. That, like, you know, the best sort of response to anybody who goes, why do you make a joke like that? I'm on stage. I'm doing comedy. I'm not, you know, tweets are always harder because you don't really know what people are tweeting. And I would also say podcasts have made it very hard because, you know, 9 times out of 10 on the podcast, you are trying to be funny, but sometimes you're just talking. And they when the mob comes for you, they're going through your podcast clips going, he laughed at this. And it's like, come on, guys. I mean, how many hours of podcasts have you done, Rich? Hours. Yeah. There's probably stuff that if somebody really hated you, they could go, let's get him. Let's get him on that. And
there's stuff we've edited as well. Like, that's the thing. I've got into something with a comedian and we've been laughing and it's been a really close to the edge. And it's afterwards, I get a message going, we're going to have to delete that. And I'm like, yeah, we better delete that. Because it's just two comics having a laugh. But it sounds like we're saying, yeah, it's okay to laugh at whatever it was we were laughing at.
Mate.
And you go, actually, we need to not put that out. Because it'll get misconstrued. Completely. The context won't be there.
The best thing we've got for our podcast is we have a female producer who is very, very left and used to work for the BBC.
Right.
And it's the best because me and Ishan need that. We need it. We need that because some of the stuff, because we will just make horrendous jokes constantly. Yeah. And she'll go, and like the other day she went, yeah, we're going to have to take the AIDS stuff out. That's literally what she said. And me and Isha were like, fine. Yeah, fine. There's always one because we, you know, we're literally just being comics, just, you know, just having a laugh about whatever. And, you know, in today's world, it will get, somebody will pick it up and go, well, you know, this is what he means.
Also,
I remember talking to one comic, a female comic, and we mentioned Bill Burr because he was performing, and she went, "I think he hates women." Oh, and I was like, "I don't know. I don't take everything he says as a statement of fact." I don't know. I just think
it's just being funny.
Yeah,
and that's the point. And if you listen to Bill Burr on other things and the way he talks about his wife and his kids, of course he doesn't hate women.
Yeah.
He just hates that there's a stereotype he's talking about.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what he's joking about. But he's not saying all women are shit, they should all be, you know, it's not. He's making a joke about it. And that's, when you see these pylons, and there's been one recently, and you just, I was looking at it. And
like, yeah, I've seen that one.
And then people had sent me the clip, and I went, all right. I said, so it's not really my place to say whether what was said is racist or not, but from what I can see, he's actually talking about the word,
and why it's bad,
and why it's bad. He wasn't, and I'm like, but then I wouldn't even use that word as to explain that. It's not even my place to get involved in that.
Always stay out of it.
Yeah,
because I'm always on the side of a comic on stage.
Yeah.
So I always, even you know what's going on there and all that, I'm like, yeah, but he's on stage doing comedy. I mean, in that joke in question, I'm not a fan of the joke. I don't think it's a particularly good joke, but that doesn't matter. That's not the point, you know. Unfunny joke is the birth of a funny joke. That's kind of how it works, you know. But I'm always just like, they're on stage doing comedy, but then you get other comics getting involved, and then you get members of the public who are all involved, and then what happens is, boy, did it spiral quickly. I mean, literally, the 2 hours later, they've got other clips of this comedian. Then they've got this comedian's parents involved.
Oh God, yeah.
Material of their parents involved, and it's like, what? And then you can see people going on podcasts where they're also doing similar jokes that people were annoyed about on the podcast with other comedians, and then they're finding the tour dates of the comedian, and then they're contacting the tour saying, why would you at this theater book this person, clearly a racist, here's the clip. And it's like, guys, this is exactly what happens. This is why I if you don't like the joke and all that, fine. You don't have to like the joke. You can kick up arms online if you want, but I just don't agree with getting their parents involved. And now the comedian in question didn't make it easy for themselves as well, because they did put out some stuff going against the left and all this sort of stuff, and making jokes that people on the left might be racist as well, and all this other stuff. And it was like, yeah, I get what you're trying to be funny, but be careful, because there is a backlog of stuff that people have got, and it's gone pretty bad. But that's what can happen. And for me, even if I agreed with the people coming at the comic, I still wouldn't be public in a way where I'm like, yeah, why would you say this? Blah, 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 blah. Because guess what? Tomorrow it could be me. It could be me so quickly. It could be you. It could be any one of us. Like they're on a stage doing comedy, you know? Jeez.
And there's no room for that comedian to say, sorry, you've raised a valid point. I'll take it on board. I'll be more careful going forward. It's that need to absolutely destroy that person's life. And they go, there's not enough to just say sorry and go, yeah, you're right, I'll think about it. It's like, no, you have to be destroyed. I have to ruin you. And they get such a fucking boner for it.
It's
really that power. And then they go, yeah, we got him cancelled. We got him ruined. We've ruined his life. He now can't pay his bills. He now can't pay his mortgage. He's going to be homeless. He hasn't got any money for his kids now because he said that thing. And you go, no, it didn't deserve that. It just, there needs to be a conversation. But what you're doing is getting this fucking massive boner for just destroying lives. And so
it's absolutely crazy.
And it's fucking nuts, man. You don't need to do that. Have a word with him, you know, flag it up, like you said. But that needs to destroy.
Just to mention Bill Burr again. Bill Burr said the best thing he's ever done, because he's had a few controversies online for jokes and whatnot. He said the best thing you do is just don't say anything. Don't apologize. unless you really want to and you feel like you did wrong, if you've, you know, if you've been an asshole, say, yeah, I was an asshole. Yeah, my bad. Or don't apologize. Carry on. The best, the person, I would say, the number one comic who is the best at getting in trouble for jokes and staying on the bus and just riding it and never get off, and is Jimmy Carr. Jimmy Carr's the best. Jimmy Carr, I've not seen a comic get in more stuff trouble online for jokes. And then Jimmy Carr, I would say Jimmy Carr and Ricky Gervais are very good. Ricky Gervais is good because everybody knows Ricky Gervais, and that's kind of, that's his thing. And he goes at people online, and he almost, when Ricky Gervais delivers his material, he does it in a way that lets you know that I am being playful, and I know the people who don't like me already don't like me, but I don't care. I'm being playful. Whereas Jimmy Carr, he, because he's almost like that robotic on stage a little bit with his delivering his material, he just delivers his jokes. You never hear him apologize. You never hear him talk about it. Like when he got in trouble for the joke about the travelers on that was huge. I mean, it was a very good joke, and that was, I tell you, when I, that was one of those jokes where I realized you've got no chance if the mob wants to get you, because Jimmy Carr literally said on that special, he goes, hey, this joke is the worst joke, one of the worst jokes I've ever come up with. This is the sort of joke that can get somebody cancelled. I know this is a really, really dark joke. Are you ready? He set it up. He does the joke, right? His material, his show was called His Dark Materials, as in, it's dark jokes. Also, the front cover, he's in a coffin. Yeah. Like, he can't tell you anymore that this, there's all he needed was like warning tape over his mouth or something. Yeah. All the signs were there that this is going to be a mad, edgy, if you don't like dark jokes, stay away. Ricky Gervais always calls his special, you know, supernova or something, and then he's doing all these horror. Yeah. At least Jimmy Carr lets you know, listen, this might not be for you. And even he still got all that, you know, people calling for him to, I mean, Catherine Ryan was like defending him and all this other stuff, and obviously Jimmy Carr didn't need it, but she's, you know, a big supporter of just being funny and doing jokes, and it just shows that when, you know, when they want to come for you, they will come for you. You just need to,
man.
You need to have everything planned and ready, and
all your affairs in order.
there is like stages for it, isn't it? Like I think the first stage is like protecting your own tweets. That's when you know, you go, oh, these tweets are all protected. Here we go. And then the YouTube channel goes to private. it's like little stages. And you go, oh, gosh, it's all kicking off.
Well, I look forward to when it happens to us, man.
mate, when it does, I want this episode. You have my full... I'm fully cooperating with you to release this episode and say Darren talks about his impending.
He said it was going to happen.
It's going to happen to all of us one day. Bloody hell.
Well, that's when we'll start a WhatsApp group. The cancelled. Yes.
Cancelled. Yeah. Bloody hell.
Darren, this has been lovely. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Thanks for having me, buddy.
It's just really nice to see your rise, you know, see where you've come from to where you're at now. It's fucking lovely, man. Honestly, genuinely pleased for you.
You're always one of those comics that I always like seeing in the green room. I'm like, oh, Rich is on. Yeah, oh, great. We'll have a good time.
Have a nice time.
Yeah. It's always good. I like that. That's one of the fun things about comedy is, you know, where ships sailing in the night. But occasionally those ships will just meet up for a little bit. Yeah.
And it's just nice, isn't it? It's a nice place to be. Where can we find you on the socials, Darren?
Yeah, just find me all socials at Darren Harrier. Everything's on there. The tour starts in September. Roadman, do come to that. Also, my podcast with Ishan Akbar, Shame is Delicious. Do give that a listen or a watch ski on the old YouTubes.
Nice. Nicely done. Lovely. I will say, before we go, you mentioned Joe Lycett at the beginning. I owe Joe Lycett an apology. So a few years ago, his book, I can't remember what it's called, Parsnips, the one.
Yeah, Parsnips Buttered.
Yes, Parsnips Buttered. Now, I knew it was coming out, and I bumped into him when I was with my ex, Jade, and we were at the Glory in Haggerston, and he was there, and we went up, we were chatting to him, and then I was a bit pissed, and I went, oh, yeah, I love the book, man. Yeah, it's really, you can really tell it was written by you rather than someone else. And he sort of looked at me, and he went, thanks, mate. And I didn't but I hadn't read it yet. But I was pissed and I didn't know what to say. I wanted to say something nice, so I said that. And it wasn't until I read it and I went, oh my God, these are the letters that he sends to, you know, like the sending letters to the council.
Yeah, he does,
like,
yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you fucking dickhead. Yeah, I know he won't listen to this, but if anyone knows Joe, just tell him Rich Wilson knows he made a fucking idiot of himself that night. Joe probably doesn't even remember, but it's one of those things that stays with you.
That's so funny. Yeah, I remember that book. It was literally stupid letters.
And stupid like, letters.
Hey. Yeah, you could tell that was written by you. Yeah.
So I just want everyone to know, yeah, I fucked up that night. What a dickhead.
That's hilarious.
Listen, Darren, thank you so much for coming on. Lovely, mate. This has been
Thanks,
Insane
bro.
In the Membrane. This has been Darren Harriet. I've been Rich Wilson, and we'll see you next time.
Insane in the Membrane.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.